We've got a community board meeting coming up next week, but I was excited to hear that you might have some news about what's happening in the Mono Bay breakwall, which is a long-running saga.
Yeah, well, for any of those that have had a look at the agenda, and it only came out yesterday, they've announced there that the peer review has been reviewed and council is just having a look at it to make sure it answers the questions that they were asked to answer. And then they're telling us that they will be coming out to the stakeholder groups in the next 2 weeks to set a date for stakeholders to meet.
Okay, so everyone gets to have their say, but it basically, the peer review is of a piece of engineering to make a better wall, is it? Is that the...
The peer review is... Well, it will look at... I'm trying to think what... It's that long ago that we actually set the criteria for...
I know.
Ecoast and Tonkin and Taylor were meant to do. It's been 18 months in the process. But it was to look at sort of how effective the existing seawall is and does anything need to be done. So
So there'll be people out there, people at the fishing club going, well, of course it effing needs to be
done. Yeah, well, those of us who use it will know what it's like when a swell rolls over the top of it and you're trying to load your boat on your trailer and things like that. And there'll be others that are saying it's affecting the wave and things like that. But the peer review is the work East Coast and Tonkin and Taylor and the peer review is completely independent of that, is to sort of look at, you know, is it effective? If it's not effective, what needs to be done? And that sort of thing.
Oh, so I thought we were at the point of having a new design and ready to build something, but we're not. We're at the point.
I don't expect that. It will tell us possibly, and I'm making assumptions. I probably shouldn't, but hopefully it will tell us if anything has to be done, and then if there is, what has to be done, and then they'll have to go away and do the design and do a build if that's what's required.
I mean, what do you expect?
Oh, I think without a doubt in mind, having used it before it was modified and after it was modified, that either the shape of it's wrong or the height of it's wrong or something, because, you know, we do get swells rolling over the top of it in quite small seas, particularly towards high tide, which is when you would expect it, and that sort of thing. And it's definitely not as long. We have lost some of the length. I expect that they will come out with some recommendations to improve it.
Okay, all right.
But that's my biased view.
Well, I mean, I've seen pictures of boulders sitting on the ramp. The boulders are kind of, how big are they, thigh high? Something like that. Those lurking just below the water when you're bringing your boat in, that doesn't seem ideal to me.
Yeah, and we've still got boulders washing up and over the top of the ramp and things like that. So, you know, it's certainly changed from what it was.
There was, wasn't there an effort to prevent the boulders, or try to prevent the boulders coming over by digging a lot of the boulders out in front of the wall?
They have done that, but the natural progression, I guess, of the rocks is along the coast like that.
Yeah,
and then
of course they keep moving too,
so they're just continually rolling up.
Yeah, and I think it was expected that was like a temporary measure.
Yep.
Or a thing that you'd have to maintain on an ongoing manner. Okay, all right. So, but progress. The main thing, folks, is that we felt like there was not much progress, but there has been progress, and. Going out to the stakeholders again. Work down at Wenera Walkway. We call it the Wenera Walkway, from the jetty to the walk bridge. So there was a patch up done there of the walls.
Yeah, they did. They've done the shotcreting on the.
I call it. It looks like a patch up, but yeah. You're going to tell me it was properly engineered or something like that.
It was properly engineered, Aaron.
Yes. Okay.
It might look like patches, but where the seawall has been broken down, they have gone through and shotcreted that to fill those areas with concrete to increase the life of the wall. And at the moment, the council's received the draft consent conditions, and they're being reviewed. And we're still hoping that construction will start in late April, and it'll take around 8 weeks. We're only doing the portion from the wharf to the jetty at this stage.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, because that's the... Well, I guess the seawall is the most robust there, and it's in good condition, whereas the seawall on the other side from the bridge to the fire station, or in that direction, needs a lot more engineering done to it.
And there were some big holes.
Yeah, there's some big holes in
it. Yeah,
and
that wall,
and it's starting to subside in places. So there's a lot more consenting and engineering required on that portion. So the aim is to get the side done first.
Yeah.
It'll be roughly 2 metres wide all the way along, so it'll be cantilevered over the existing walkway to a certain extent by about 400 to 600 in places.
Yes.
So it'll be a pretty nice walkway when it's completed, looking at the design.
So wider than it is now with a handrail.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. All right. Car parks have been rebuilt at, what, Papahura and Wainui, is it?
Yep. There's some work being done on both those car parks. I'm not sure what the dates are for them to start, but they're not very far away.
Hopefully.
There's about 2 weeks' work to be done on the Wainui Beach car park, and somewhere in April and May is looking at sort of the dates they're aiming to do that in. So that'll, basically, it's not extending the car park, as far as I understand it. It's basically just resurfacing it, realigning it in certain areas and things like that.
So the Wakaama, I noticed yesterday, the Wakaama has been announced for 11th of May. 800 paddlers coming to town. So probably we'd be hoping it's finished by then.
Well, the Papahua one, it may or may not start before then, but I know council is aware of those dates. And
the soccer starts as well.
And things like that.
Yeah.
So they'll be worked around. We realise, you know, the importance of Wakaama and that festival for them each year. Mm. And so, yeah, we've made those dates, we've made council aware of those dates, and hopefully the contractors are aware of those dates now. And they'll move out of the area. It was a bit like a year or two ago when they were doing some upgrades around that area on the road and that sort of thing, and we got them to move all the machinery out for the Christmas period and came back
okay,
after Christmas.
So it's
just about demobilising them and remobilising them afterwards.
Okay. Now, there's been talk for a long time, and I know there's been slow progress about getting CCTV cameras in town. A lot of the shopkeepers are very interested in having a bit more security there. Where are we at with that?
It's progressing. My understanding is that they're actually negotiating at the moment, and they've started discussions with suppliers on that and installers. We, as a community board, came up with a priority list over 7 cameras. I don't know how many have been allocated to Raglan, but I guess that'll come out once they got the pricing finalised. They'll then be able to confirm how many we're going to get.
Okay, so it's you guys handed that over, and then it's a bit out of our hands. Is it?
Yeah.
Does the whole district, or even wider?
It's a whole district.
Okay.
Yeah. So Sunkus from council is leading that on behalf of everybody.
So okay, I imagine the people, the shopkeepers in Huntley, are going to be like, "We need it too.
Well,
we need it more than you."
Yeah,
maybe.
But we've said the same thing, you know. So it's going to be a matter of finding that balance. You know, I would say there's probably a minimum of 4 we require, and if we can get 7, that's fantastic.
Okay, all right. The project at the wharf, down the wharf, I mean, we can drive down there and get on the wharf and all that, all nice these days, but how close is the final bit of work to being finished?
I think we're looking at about 6 weeks. So I haven't actually talked to Richard or Niall recently to find out exactly where they are, but based on discussions previously, I imagine we've got about 6 weeks to go before they've sort of got the bulk of the work finished. There'll be some bits and pieces. The trees have still got to go in later on. And there's some signage and things like that that will go in later on. But
okay.
The bulk of the civil should be cleaned up within about 6 weeks.
So the work they're doing at the moment, is that on those kind of steps that step down into the water?
Yeah, on what I think what they call them, the tidal stairs and that sort of thing. That's being basically the bits that they're completing, and there's another concrete pour to go, I believe. And then most of the concreting work will be finished, and then it's really the sort of the cosmetic side of things, getting everything tidied up and the final rails installed and things like that to stop the cars driving into the pedestrian area and those sorts of things.
And for people wondering how you can pour concrete and it dries when it's in the water, Dennis will now explain that it's a chemical process.
Well, yeah. Not having done a lot of it myself, I'm not that sure, but yeah, there is a chemical process to it, and it's a matter of speeding up the setting process of the cement,
yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
And you actually see sometimes they've poured concrete in summer and they actually keep a sprinkler on it to keep it wet to enable that process. So yeah, don't worry about that, folks, if you were worried. You probably weren't. So now we get into... Oh, let's talk about Greenslade Road. At the last Greenslade Road playgrounds... At the last community board meeting, some of the people from the community there said they wanted what's called a natural playground instead of one with swings and slides, I guess. What's the council doing with that suggestion?
Council's taken on board what the community have asked for, and it has looked at natural playgrounds. And they've actually just forwarded to the community board members a copy of a one that Boss School and Miss School, I think it was, did in Auckland at Marahupara Playground, which is a natural one, sort of say made out of natural elements that sort of in textures from the earth, such as trees, logs, stumps, boulders, plants, and that sort of thing.
So it doesn't have swings and slides made of.
No, it doesn't have swings and slides and things like that.
It's different. Yeah, yeah. So just trying to get a bit of an idea.
A totally different thing. So we've got a discussion this afternoon when the community board gets together informally just to talk about what's happening and what we want to do. And that'll be one of the things that's on the agenda to have a look at it and have a talk out. Because I guess one of the things we need to establish is what do the kids of the area want and what does the wider community of Lawrence and Bay Glenside Road want?
Yeah, yeah, because the nearest playground to there is probably Wallace Street.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a lack of playgrounds within the Raglan community for sure.
Yeah.
And that's what council's trying to address at the moment.
Yeah, okay. Now, moving on, should we talk about the rate rise? We haven't mentioned this number on the radio yet this week, but Lisa sent me something earlier in the week. I think it's 13% rate rise is what they're proposing.
I saw a text last night, which you obviously saw as well. Well, we've got a separate one, but that's what I believe, yes.
Yeah.
How that's derived, I'm not sure at this stage. I haven't had the opportunity to talk to our councillor on it.
Well, that's
so it'll be interesting to find out how they've derived and come up with a number of 13 to 13.5%.
So we do know that they've abandoned the idea of getting the long term plan. They're like, for folks who don't know, the long term plan is the 10-year plan, and they review it every 3 years. They were trying to review it at the moment, but with the changes coming through from government, it became impossible, I think, is the way they would describe it. And so they've put that off a year and done a special annual plan, and it's something's got a name.
An enhanced annual plan is what it's been called. Yeah,
especially enhanced rate rise. Is your the community board did ask the council to have a rate rise that was a single figure rate rise that capped at 10%. That obviously hasn't happened. Anything to say about that?
Well, we're all ratepayers at the end of the day, we had flagged to them that we wanted it kept at around about the 5%. But obviously they've seen a need to increase it beyond that. And then, like, as you mentioned, they were looking at, with the LTP, they were talking of numbers around 20% and things like that. So now with the decision to have an enhanced annual plan, that they've come up with a reduced number, which I guess is a positive, but still a fairly significant number for most people.
Yeah, it is. Interestingly, it's about half of Hamilton's proposed. There's been a lot of squabbles amongst the councillors in Hamilton about their 25% rate rise. And as far as I can tell, all they're arguing about is whether you do it up front over a three-year period or gently over a three-year period. It was still going to amount to the same amount of money required to cover their huge amount of debt that they seem to have. So,
yeah, I think it's the time has come for local body politics or local bodies to sort of re-engineer themselves and have a good look at how they function and how they finance themselves and how they carry out work. At the end of the day, I still say that New Zealand is a tiny, tiny country in the global scheme of things, and we've got these sort of all these local bodies set up with only a few thousand people in each area, and we're trying to administer a business around that sort of number. And from a scale point of view, it just doesn't stack up.
We
need to look at the amalgamation, and we need to look at it sooner than later.
Yeah, yeah. And there has been, I know the government before the last local body election, they did have a group looking at a different way of running the local body system, and there was a big report arrived, and then silence. I didn't hear anyone talking about it.
Well, I guess it was obviously bad news then, Helen.
There were suggestions in that you run through, you have larger council areas but with better local representation like community boards and things like that, so you try and get it from both ends.
Yeah, which I guess is going back to what you had 50 years ago when, the community, or I've forgotten what they were called there.
Borough councils, county councils.
And those sorts of things, but they had a lot more say and a lot more clout as to what happened in your local community area and how your rates in that area were spent.
Yeah.
obviously demands and things like that and people's expectations have increased over that time too. But
Brings up an issue, like, can we afford to keep raising our standards and increasing our expectations with our council services? Like, to me, it's looking like we might not be able to afford to keep doing that anymore.
Well, I think that's why when you I say we've got to re-engineer ourselves and have a look, you know, are we there to provide a community, are we there to provide the basic infrastructure, are we there also to provide all the other things like supporting museums, supporting art galleries, supporting all these other things that are not part of essential infrastructure.
But even the essential infrastructure is looking increasingly difficult to pay for.
The three waters... It's got more and more expensive, for sure.
And we are continually increasing our standard. The line I keep using about the new sewage treatment plants, the first one's opened in Meremere, and we're having one built here right now, is that you can wash your hands and the output. That's great. It's great to have the water cleaned up like that, but we're spending more money to make it even better and better. Can we keep doing that? I mean, in 10 years' time, are we going to say, oh, that standard's not good enough, we have to raise it again, we have to be able to drink the water?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting scenario, and it's, as you say, it's something we probably need to look at. But, you know, what's changed, it's really, what's forcing us down that route is the growth within Ragland. So, you know, can you, and where's that growth all coming from? If you look at the last year, you've got 150,000 people come and immigrated into New Zealand. Can we continue to have that growth in the country? Or we're better off to say, tough luck, guys, we don't want you. And I know it sounds rough, but, you know, we need to ask ourselves those questions. Can we afford to continue growing? If we can't, then do we put the heat back on people and say, hey, we're going to have natural growth within the country rather than bring in a whole lot of immigrants?
Yeah, well, if there were houses to put them in and infrastructure to support them, that would be fine, because that's what we're talking about here, is the problems with our infrastructure. But, I mean, the government makes the decision to open up the immigration floodgates so that certain employers can get staff easily, or cheap staff easily. There's a whole debate there about that as well. But, yeah, the end result is that our systems are overloaded. And anyone who puts up a subdivision is immediately able to sell their houses. And there's predictions about how much Ragland will grow. And as far as I've just sort of had this realization now in the last few weeks, that Ragland will get as big as we want, because whatever houses we build, whatever sections we open up, they're going to get sold. And we've got another 400 coming on the Coning property soon.
Exactly, yeah.
But we could do 10 times as much as that, and I think it would sell, because there's a housing crisis in the country.
Well, there's a housing crisis, and you're also in an area close to the sea. And, you know, in New Zealand, people are attracted to the sea. There's no doubt about it. You know, years ago, a lot of land agents and a lot of people used to buy property adjacent to the sea, because there's no more being created. So if you can get property that overlooks the sea, or you can see the sea, or you're close to harbour, you're close to an amenity that's free to use, basically, then it's always going to attract people.
Yeah.
And in Ragland, we've tried to create that lifestyle, which is different to everywhere else, which also attracts people. So, yeah, you can build houses. People with reasonably affluent people will flood into Ragland and continue to buy them up.
My only question is, it's only reasonably affluent people who can afford houses anywhere in the country. I don't quite know how...
Sorry.
I don't understand how it's working at the moment. Like, who's buying all the houses? Probably...
The banks.
The bank and speculators and things like that. Yeah, it's a bit... Okay, so that's a bit of a mess. The community board can't solve all that.
No. It's, unfortunately, we can't come to grips with that one.
But I guess a conversation about what the community can actually afford is important.
I think the community board's got to sort of look at what – it's got to put some pressure on council to sort of say, are we heading in the right direction, or do we need to do a radical rethink or change direction completely, or do we need to eat humble pie? You know, we've increased the number of councillors. It's costing us money. It's – okay, people will argue, but it's only small pie, and that's what I get a lot back from a lot of councillors when I say, hey, have you thought about really what is the outcome you got from your sustainability team? And they say, oh, even if we drop two people, Dennis, it's not much money. But the thing is, if we started to pick those up right across the board, then we are saving millions of dollars. And that's why I'm saying we need to have a revisit of it. Do we need a sustainability team in Waikato District Council, Waipa, Hamilton, etc.?
Right.
Why can't you have one that looks across the whole district? Or why can't we say to Environment Waikato, you guys pick that up, whatever they're called now, still Environment Waikato? Waikato Regional Council.
Yeah, it was actually better when they were Environment, because then you didn't get them confused with the District Council.
Yeah, I know. So why can't we say, hey, you guys, that's yours. You look after it. Fits better in your niche.
Yeah.
I think we've got to start to think quite differently in the way we run local councils.
And there has been this, it's not meant as an experiment, but it's become an experiment where Watercare was running our three waters, and they have the resources and the institutional knowledge to way superior to what the handful of staff did at Waikato District Council beforehand. And even though there were some cock-ups last year, I think they're still viewed as being the superior way of doing things. Unfortunately, with the changes the government's brought in, they've announced a few weeks ago that they're going to withdraw from the contract with Waikato District Council. But that was a sign of a bigger body having the knowledge and ability to handle things that the smaller council groups couldn't do.
Yeah, and they also get the learnings from other areas. You know, they get the learnings from what they're doing up in the Auckland area and things like that, and they can apply that to other areas. So, you know, those are the sorts of things, yeah, we've got to start to consider. And I guess that raises the topic, is it's going to be interesting, and we need, particularly in Raglan, we need, with the challenges we've had over the last couple of years, we need to understand what council's going to do here now to maintain our system.
And yeah, and I don't think
no indication of that whatsoever yet.
I don't think they know. They've just had to throw out their long-term plan process and come up with a special one to get them through the next year. But talking about these issues, this reminded me about something. We had these, although there's a lot of fuss about the sewage systems and the wastewater outlet and all things like that, the thing that was concerning me the most was these, we'll call them rogue readings from the testing outside the museum, where the E. coli test was extremely, I would say extremely high, and no one knew where that came from. It wasn't associated with like heavy rainfall, which it often is.
I disagree with you.
It was related to heavy rainfall. Actually, yeah, I'm wrong about that. It was not associated with the wastewater outlet. At the wrong accidental releases, it was not associated with that. It was associated with rainfall, but we don't know specifically where it came from.
Yeah, no, and Matthew and I did raise at the meeting about that outfall. It used to come down out under Stewart Street.
An old one.
Yeah, and Matthew actually chased me up a couple of weeks ago on it and said, have I pinpointed it? So I went down there last week, and the big drain's still there. And that drain, I've been back and talked to Matthew about it.
He's from Watercare.
Yeah. And, yeah, that drain goes up and picks up all the rainwater from up Stewart Street, Gilmore Street, up the main road, and all that catchment. So it also picks up all the rubbish that's on the side of the road, all the dogs that have been visited those areas, and things like that, and more brings that down into that very little bay that's right there, which doesn't probably get flushed out that well by the tide. So I'm not really surprised that you'd have a high reading in that area.
What do we do? Can we do something?
Oh,
don't swim there.
No, well, you could get rid of all the dogs in Raglan. How's that for starting a new debate? Now, come on, people.
I'll put that on the notice board for you. The last guy tried a debate. He wanted to get rid of the Phoenix Palms, and that caused a lot of fuss on the notice board.
Yeah, I saw that a couple of weeks ago. I wouldn't know what it was, and I'd have to support the retention of them to put my cards on the table.
I did warn him, because I'd interviewed him the day before. I did warn him that people might be quite attached to those palms. The wire issue he was talking about was important, but he did really upset a few people the way he went about that. So don't swim there at the moment is what we would say.
Yeah, and I to answer your question, I don't know how you do it, because it's sort of, when you look at the way, it's sort of the way the land's shaped around there, It's at the apex of a triangle, and that sort of thing. So it's not going to get flushed out by currents working through that area or anything like that. So if we have got effluent that's running off the roads from natural sources or whatever, then, yeah, it is going to build up in that area.
Yeah. Okay, and speaking of uproar online, there's the recent article in the Waikato Times from a couple of days ago about frustration with rents downtown here in Raglan, and I know that you have no levers that the community board has community board doesn't have actually a lot of levers over things. This is the truth of the matter. You're an advisory board.
Correct.
Technically. Any thoughts about this issue? Like the rent does seem to continue to rise in the middle of town.
You can compare rents in Raglan with rents in other areas. Mm. And we looked at a property 2 years ago, actually, at Waihee, a commercial property. And one of the things we did was check out the rents in Raglan, because we compared with the rent that was being paid for this on this property. And it was about a 25% difference, being cheaper at Waihee Beach than it was in Raglan. And one would have thought that they're similar sort of area, similar sort of markets.
Yeah,
but obviously not. But you know, it's rents are determined on a supply and demand basis, and if people want to pay that, then tenants will, or landlords will charge that. It's a bit like a house and things like that. You know, when there's a shortage of supply, the rents go up, and it's just the way the market forces work. And things like that now, whether it's right or wrong, or that comes back to the moral and the moral values some people have, and whether they're prepared to charge what some might regard as exorbitant rents, or whether they sort of recognise that I'm doing all right in my life, I'll make it a little bit easier for my tenant.
Mm. And I think we have a tendency to talk about the market as if we're talking about the tide, and that, you know, it can't be stopped, it does what it does. And that's it, and we got to live with it. But like you say, there's ethical values around whether you do get the most out of your rental or not. And I don't know, as a culture, I guess we have to talk about that.
And well,
maybe encourage some thought around it. I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I guess we're all... The nature of the majority of people is that we're relatively greedy. See, we want as much as we can get for ourselves. And things like that, and I think those are the sort of things that you see come into play. The philanthropic side of people is few and far between, I guess is how you'd put it. And I guess, you know, also you need to ask yourself, with some businesses, and I've looked some businesses in Raglan, is it the right business for this location? Is it really sustainable long term, or are those people just They've got a dream, they've got a vision, and they're trying to make something work that in this environment is always going to struggle, because you just haven't got the, as someone once said to me, if you've got a retail business, you need to have lots of pitter-patter past your door every day, all day. Mm. And in Raglan, you've got that for certain parts of the week, but you haven't got it for, you know, 365 days of the year.
You have to build that in.
And
There was someone famously had a business for 3 weeks down the other side of the Harbour View, a little shop there.
Yeah, yeah. He came in the summer and got out again, and he probably made a fortune, but he...
No, I'm thinking of the guy who was very upset. He was slagging everyone.
Oh, he had a cafe or something.
Yeah, he was there for about 3 weeks and slagging someone off at the end of it on the notice board. So,
yeah
I think that was a case of someone who... Yeah, I know people like to come to Raglan, and it's like, oh, I can start a business in Raglan, and that's great, but... The rent's obviously high, and
you've got to work out the economics of it, and is it a business people want to see? Is it going to be sustainable? You know, you've got to do your numbers and things like that. So you need, you know, I'd suggest to people, if you're not sure, if you haven't got a business background, pay a little bit of money, get some advice, and get someone to do some calculations and numbers for you.
That should be standard advice for anyone and everyone doing that.
Yep.
But actually, we're probably speaking to the converted, because everyone here knows that. It's the people out of our area that need to hear that. One other thing we were just going to talk about was, and we've been banging on about this for a long time, is a structure plan. I bring this up because I know that currently the two major property developers in town, Raglan Land Co. and the Coning Farm, are arguing amongst themselves within the forum of the council structure plan process about exactly where a bypass road might go around the back of Rangitahi, come out near the Extreme Zero Waste entrance and head on maybe down to Wainui Road. And if we had a structure plan, would we already have some indication of where that should go? yeah. I'm kicking off a discussion here.
Yeah, no, I guess my view on that is that council should actually look at where's the best place to put it and then be talking to the landowners. The landowners shouldn't be telling council what they're going to do. Mm. And I know council has done some work on this, and I need to talk to our council a little bit more, or talk to the people, and she may or may not know. We need to have further probably discussions within council with the planners to see what they've got in mind. I certainly do know that they've been looking at a connection between Wainui, the options for a connection between Wainui Road and Mangatawhiri Road, and that sort of thing. And we certainly need to be looking at putting something across there.
But that would be, how expensive would that be?
Well, we just talked about infrastructure and the cost of infrastructure, yes, it would be expensive. But at the end of the day, if you're going to continue to grow and if you're going to put 500 sections on Regalenko's property, or Peacock's, as most people probably recognise it, and then another 400 or 500 on Koning's, you basically double the size of Raglan overnight. You've got to put the infrastructure in to cater with it. And if that means that you turn around to those guys and say, well, we're going to charge an extra $40,000 per section or $100,000 per section, then we've got to grow the balls and do it. And just say, yep, that's what's going to cost. So your section's not $400,000 now, it's $500,000, and pay the money. I think we've got to stop letting developers drive what council's decisions are, and say to developers, well, because of the growth in Raglan, because you guys brought in another 1,000 sections over the next 15 years, then this is what the cost for your development's going to be.
Is it too late for that now, though?
I don't think it is too late, no.
It's too late for some of it.
What's done is done. But, you know, it raises the other question that I've had, and I've put to council, particularly to their Parks and Reserves guys. If you walk around Rangatahi and look at the amount of area that's in grass. Sam's probably listening to this.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Sam. But if you look at the number of area that's in grass and on slopes and things like that, I've said to council, who's actually going to maintain that? And should we be looking at a targeted rate on those sections that are in Rangatahi to maintain all that green space that's been sold to them as part of their development?
On the other hand, we do want some green space. We do need some green space. We know we need sports fields. We've talked about that a lot.
But this is all steep and on the sides of hills and things like that. And you can't just let it grow long grass, because then it becomes a fire hazard in the middle of summer and various things like that. So, you know, I haven't got answers on how that sort of stuff's all going to be maintained. But it does raise that question. So, you know, I think to me we've got to start looking more at user pace. It's the only way we can fund things.
Yeah, and I think, like, literally for council, that is the only way they can do it. Like, they're reaching the limits of their capacity to pay for stuff.
You look at Sydney, you know, and I spent a bit of time in Sydney and that sort of thing. They'll put new bypass roads in, they'll put tunnels in. It's all tolled. There's tolls on everything. So you pay. People squeal at the start, but when you're going to save yourself 20 minutes every morning and 20 minutes every night, you'll pay the $3.
Yeah, or if you don't mind, you don't mind.
Or if you want to sit in the traffic, you go that way. Yeah.
Theoretically, there should be less traffic in the slow route, because all the people going the fast route.
Unfortunately, natural growth sort of.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. When you build roads, somehow
they still fill up.
More cars arrive. It's actually a strange phenomenon, which we won't talk about now.
You know, and you've got the you've got the toll roads, and I use the one between Tauranga and that bypasses Te Puke going to Whakatane, and that sort of thing. You save yourself 15 minutes probably on the trip, and it costs you $2. Well, it's less than the cost of your petrol.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, these days, that's interesting.
You know, so, yeah, you use it. So I think we should have more of that sort of stuff in this country.
Okay, well, let's wrap up there. We've been talking to Dennis Amer, our Community Board Chairperson, and the Community Board meeting is next Wednesday, next week, at 1:30 in the Town Hall somewhere?
No, it's 1:30 at Te Mata.
It's
in Te Mata Hall. So because of the growth, the expansion of the Community Board area, we tried now to have one meeting in Te Mata and one meeting at Te Uku each year.
Okay, so it'll be in Te Mata. Same time, though.
Same time. Yep.
Yeah, and is it hard to find the hall in Te Mata? Probably not.
Directly opposite the school is probably the easiest explanation.
Okay, all right. Thanks for your time, Dennis.
Thanks, Aaron.
Okay, folks, we're going to have a little break. And don't forget, we're talking to Bonnie from Whitechapel Jack at around 9:30.